very close election for president. There was a recount. There were issues and problems identified in that recount, and Florida rewrote a recount law. As we have started going through from the count to the recount, it is not surprising that we have identified some places in which the law doesn't hold together with the practical realities of the experiences that voters have. And we should all be able to agree, whether you're a Democrat or you're a Republican, we should all be able to agree that the goal here is to have a complete and accurate count of all lawful ballots and to ensure that that count is done accurately. And that is what each of these four lawsuits that I'm about to describe aims at doing. So the first of them is a lawsuit that I mentioned last week that seeks to invalidate the state's signature matching statute. Florida has a law that basically compares the signature on file with the signature on either a provisional or a vote-by-mail ballot. And if the signatures are deemed not to match, then the vote is discarded. Now, what are the problems with that? First and foremost is that the people doing the signature matching, they are not experts in handwriting. They are not experts in signatures. They have actually not even received any training in signatures or handwriting. These are just everyday election officials who are no doubt trying to do the best they can under difficult circumstances. As they are opening the polls and closing the polls and processing forms, they are called upon to do a task for which they are fundamentally not trained and ill-suited, which is determining whether one signature matches another signature. There are lots of reasons why people's signatures change and don't match. Sometimes people sign their name Ted, and sometimes they sign them William. Sometimes they sign them with a middle initial, sometimes they don't. Sometimes they sign them in a hurry, sometimes they sign them slowly. Sometimes they sign them in ink, sometimes they sign them in pencil. Sometimes a woman will sign with a maiden name, and sometimes they will sign only with a married name. There are any number of reasons why signatures don't match from one to the other, which is why over the last year we have seen state after state that has a similar law have those laws challenged and struck down. So we have seen that a similar law struck down in New Hampshire. We have seen a similar law struck down in Iowa. We have seen a similar law struck down in Georgia. And the reason is because when you look at those laws and you look at the effect they are not effective anti-fraud measures. What they are disenfranchising measures. They are measures that have a disproportionate impact on people who are ill and elderly. They have a disproportionate impact on voters of color, and they have a disproportionate impact on young voters. And these are voters who have done everything right. There is nothing in the Constitution that qualifies the right to vote based on a consistent signature. So that is our first lawsuit, which we think is a common sense way for the court to ensure that every vote counts in this very close election. The second lawsuit was filed by VoteBets, among others, that seeks to bring uniformity and common sense to the issue facing mail ballots that were postmarked prior to Election Day but were not received until after Election Day. The issue here is that, as you know, the mail sometimes is very fast. The mail sometimes is very slow. Under normal circumstances, someone may put a ballot in the mail and it arrives within 24 hours, or it arrives 2 weeks later. And it is not reasonable for people's vote to be taken away from them and for them to be disenfranchised based on the speed with which the U.S. Postal Service is able to deliver these ballots. The problem was further compounded because of a terrorist incident that, as you all know, caused significant delay and significant disruption in mail delivery in southern Florida because as a result of the mailing of pipes. That further complicated and made more difficult the timely delivery of ballots. Now, inevitably, the other side will say, or some will say, yes, But we have a recount going on, and we can't now interject new ballots in that arrived after Election Day because that ship has sailed. That ship has sailed, and it's too late. Here's the thing. Under Florida law, overseas voters have 10 days to have their ballots be received and counted. So a ballot received today that came from a voter in Brussels gets counted. A ballot that is received today that came from a Floridian living in Canada gets counted. So the state already has a mechanism to count, to process and count mail ballots that come in after Election Day that are postmarked earlier. And there is no reason why a Floridian in Ottawa ought to have their ballot counted when a retired veteran in Pensacola who mailed a ballot on the same day and it didn't get here in time. Sure, that just doesn't make any sense. And that's why VoteVest has decided to bring this lawsuit because of the disenfranchising effect it has on people. That case, there was a status conference in that case earlier today, and the court ordered briefing from both sides to be completed by Thursday night. The signature matching case will be heard tomorrow in federal court in Tallahassee. The third case that I wanted to discuss is a case that was filed today that deals with voter intent and marking. So just this table set so everyone understands what we're discussing. After the machine recount is complete, there will be a set of ballots that are so-called overvotes and undervotes. These are ballots that the machine was unable to determine if there was a marking in the race, which would be called an undervote, where it doesn't detect any marking, or where it detected multiple markings. In other words, it looks like someone voted for two candidates. That is called an overvote. So those under and overvotes, which will number in the tens or hundreds of thousands and be reviewed manually, then when they are reviewed, have to be judged against some standard, right? You have to have some standard for determining what is a vote and what isn't a vote. So the simplest example is an X in an oval a vote, right? There has to be a standard for whether an X in an oval is a vote or not. Florida has two specific situations that are set out in the regulations that are curious and candidly simply make no sense. They don't make sense for Democrats. They don't make sense for Republicans. They literally don't make any sense. So here they are. The first is that the regulation says that where you have a marking other than an oval or a connect the arrow, because as you know, some of the optical scan ballots in Florida, you connect the arrow, some you fill out an oval. But where you have the marking other than one of those two, it only gets used if it's consistently used across the ballot. So let's assume that someone filled in ovals for every race except the governor's race. And for the governor's race, they circled and starred and put arrows pointing to Andrew Gillum's name. It is unambiguously clear when you look at the ballot that this voter really, really wanted Andrew Gillum because they circled the name and then they put arrows and stars around the name. Under this regulation, that ballot would not count as a vote for Mayor Gillum, even though 100 people out of 100 would say that the intent of that voter was for Andrew Gillum. That makes no sense. I'm not aware of any state in the country that has a rule that says that. And it's not constitutional. We can't deny people a right to vote because they chose to put X's in some oval, circle some names, or fill in some oval. There is nothing about consistency from one race to the other that is rock solid determinative of intent. It may be relevant to intent, but it is not determinative of intent. And that's the problem with the Florida regulation. The second regulation is in some ways even more curious. It says that you can't cross out an errand vote with some kind of marking, you have to use worth. That's curious because most people actually cross things out by crossing them out, not by using worth. Most people, when they think they made a mistake, they don't write a note that says, please don't count it. They actually cross it out. They may cross it out by Xing or scribbling over the filled-in circle. They may cross it out by Xing out the name. They may X out the name and circle the other person with an arrow and stars, as I just described. But a rule that says that you can't cross out an errand vote, but that you have to use words, is simply nonsensical. It doesn't comport with the everyday experiences of how people act in their lives. I'm not aware of any profession other than lawyers, perhaps, who initial their corrections. And they certain, and I'm not aware of anyone in their daily lives who regularly writes notes when they want to say that they made a mistake with a typo or some other issue that they would normally cross out. It also has a discriminatory impact on a particular category of voters. It has a particularly discriminatory impact on people for whom the English language is not their first language, and they voted in an English ballot because they're comfortable voting in an English ballot, but it would not occur to them to write a note. It discriminates against folks who are illiterate. And as you know, we long ago found that our literacy tests were unconstitutional under the U.S. Constitution. This serves as a form of literacy test, and we will not stand by and let voters be disenfranchised as a result. The last lawsuit that we filed, which I believe everyone on this call advisory for this call, is a lawsuit that we filed to ensure a full and accurate recount and to ensure that by making sure that counties have sufficient time to do their work. There is no question that that counties right now all throughout the state are working hard, some counties around the clock, to count by machine all 8+ million ballots. In some counties, that is a relatively easy task. In no county is it an easy task, but in some counties, it is a relatively easier task because there are smaller counties and they have fewer ballots to count. In other counties, it is a Herculean task and indeed a near impossible task to count all of those ballots through machines, deal with the inevitable paper jams, deal with the inevitable staffing issues, and deal, frankly, with the distractions that Governor Scott, through various lawsuits that he has filed, has caused these election workers to divert time and energy. Lawsuits, which I will point out today, he lost the second of which. Yesterday, having lost in Broward County over his effort to seize voting equipment, where the judge found no fraud, today he withdrew his lawsuit in Palm Beach County after the judge made indications that there was no indication of fraud there either. But in any event, these counties are working as hard as they can, and no voter should be disenfranchised because they live in a county that happens to be very popular. Yet, read literally on its face, that's what the Florida statute says. It says that if the recount is not finished by certain dates, then the old results, the pre-recount results, or the partial recounted results, are used instead. Where will that potentially leave us? It will potentially leave us with three categories of counties. There will be counties that use the twice recounted ballots. Those are counties that finish by Thursday machine recount, and then the hand recount by Sunday. There'll be a second category of counties that meet the machine recount but may not finish the hand recount by Sunday. And then there may yet be a third category of counties that don't finish the machine recount by Sunday. So depending on where you live in the state, your ballot may be counted once, or it may be counted twice, or it may be counted three times. If there is one thing that history and Supreme Court precedent teaches us, is that the state of Florida is not free to count some ballots multiple times in a recount, and other ballots not at all. And yet that is the statutory regime as it is written if it is strictly interpreted. So we have asked the federal courts to take the common sense step of ensuring that every county has an opportunity to complete both phases of the recount, without interruption. I will note that the statutory regime that was put in place with the tight deadlines that are in it was put in place to meet the federal statutory safe harbor provision for the Electoral College. We are not in a presidential year, and therefore that does not apply. Senator Nelson won't be sworn in again for the next Senate, or if Governor Scott were to prevail, he would not be sworn in until January. The new governor doesn't take effect until January, and there is no official business that is conducted by a senator until they are sworn in. They are not a senator. They are not a part senator before it, and they are not a part senator afterwards. That when they are sworn in, they become the senator for the new term. So there is no rush. There is no practical reason why the state of Florida has to rush this in a non-presidential year. And so we have asked the court to address that. I have recently learned within the last few minutes that the court has asked for telephone status conferences on these last two cases tomorrow. So we will have further information at that point about what the timing of resolution of those cases will be. And with this, I will take any questions.